The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Welcome, welcome one and all to Cooking Like a Pro. You have found us here at KCNR Radio, Talk Radio. I'm here with, I'm Chef Cal, just in case you didn't recognize my voice.
And I'm Mrs. Chef.
Mr. and Mrs. Chef here to talk to you about food for the next hour. And again, so we're at 1460 AM or 96.5 FM. You can find us both places if you'd like to call in. Ben would, our engineer would be happy to get a question to us. If you have a question, it's at local number 530-605-4567. Again, 530-605-4567. And hey, you know, we're working on a cookbook. Been working on it for a while. Oh, I don't know, maybe 7 or 8 months. I know it seems like years, but no. Anyway, so we're in the testing phase of just confirming, you know, that the recipes are right. I mean, I guess I could put it out there. How often have you, you know, seen a recipe and said, hey, this sounds good, and then you make it, and it really doesn't come out like you had expected. So because of that, I would say if that's the case, then they probably didn't test it enough or test it at all. And we test ours several times. The one we're working on today is, I guess, clam chowder, which I don't know how many times I've made, every Friday for, you know, 45 years, I guess, whatever that would come out to be. So I made a lot of times, and, you know, so I'm pretty comfortable with it. But again, you do have to make sure that, when you're writing a book, is that anyone's going to be able to turn around and make this, you know, the person at home that's making the food, whoever that happens to be, all the way up to a professional chef and everywhere in between. So anyway, it's something that you have to do so you work out the kinks.
Well, you go ahead and you started today doing what? You started the prep process.
I did the prep, but, I'm not going to be home tomorrow. So, Chris is going to be making, the clam chowder without me, which is exactly what we want to do. Although she's a very accomplished, in the skill of cooking. We've been working together for a couple of decades almost. And, you know, it's just something that she's really going to have a pretty good idea. And then, once she goes through it, makes whatever, you know, alterations, and we'll have, somebody else do it. And, then when we send that book out, it's going to be something that is, pretty much right on point.
So tell me, without you there tomorrow, what do you expect me to do? What do you suggest that I do?
Well, here's the thing. There's a couple of things with clam chowder that people have different thoughts on all the ingredients. And I had a chef, this was decades ago, and I actually just heard from him yesterday, one of my mentors. He would remember this because I remember it. And I'd made a large pot of soup, I mean about 30 gallons. You know, you could swim in it if you wanted to, because, you know, we're doing high volume places where we were. And I just, you know, for me, a mirepoix is your vegetables, you know, for your soups and your stocks. And so I just celery, onion, carrots, you know, celery, onion, carrots, celery, onion, carrots. He says, no, I don't want carrots in it. Well, I did not listen to him. And I probably cut, 25 pounds of carrots, and then diced them up and threw them in there with the onions and celery. And he had me pick out all these small pieces of carrot. It was my first mentor, George Goodrich, amazing chef, but don't put carrots in this chowder. You know, and the other thing is a lot of people are kind of against the idea of bacon in chowder. I shouldn't say a lot of people. I don't know how many. I wouldn't think very many. I mean, who doesn't like bacon? But I put bacon in mine, and if you don't like bacon, you're not going to like my chowder.
Is there a reason? Did he substitute like a parsnip The carrots, or he just did not put carrots?
No, he just did that. I think it was more of a pigmentation thing. You know, that's why in a mirepoix where you omit carrots, if you want a light colored sauce or a light colored stock, you don't want that pigmentation coming off the carrot. And generally, you'll replace that with leeks. That would be the French, understanding. But I just wanted, I thought it was pretty. Got a little orange things in there that I got to pick out.
But in yours, there is carrots.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's just simply because of that.
In spite of, maybe,
I don't know. So that was one of my clam chowder stories. But, it's a great soup. It's all purpose. It's not overly difficult to make. It's like one of those things where it kind of gets better, every other day, like spaghetti sauce or chili.
Let me hear the process, because I've watched you make it. I'm going to read the recipe. Yeah. Let me hear how you would make it.
And I'll probably shut my cell phone off, so you'll have to Google if you have any questions. But so basically, we want to start off with your bacon, because your bacon is going to take as long as it's already cured. It's in a brine, so you literally can eat bacon right out of the package if you want. You want to go ahead and dice that up, and you start cooking that till it's about 3/4 cooked. And then you just start adding your ingredients. You add your mirepoix, which is your celery, onion, and carrots. And then you also add your what we call bouquet garni, which is the aromatics, which is your parsley, bay leaf, and thyme.
Backing up. Mm-hmm. No oil in the pan because there's a lot of fat in the bacon?
Oh, yeah. You don't. If you start with bacon, you're never going to need oil.
Okay.
So good to point that out. And something else about bacon. This is just something that's in my craw because I went to the store today. They used to always sell bacon by the pound. Bacon is a pound. You go and you see a package of bacon. It's a pound. A pound is 16 ounces. It's a pound of bacon. People look at the price. Okay, let's say the package is $6. And they just assume they're getting a pound. Sometime in the past, I don't know when, but there was some time in the past that the bacon people got together with the packaging people, I guess, and they decided they'd do the same exact package. Looks the same, except it's only 12 ounces of bacon. So it's only 3/4 the amount of bacon, 16 ounces in a pound. It's 12 ounces instead of 16 ounces, which is a pound. So I don't know. I feel ripped off, but of course I know that as a chef, and I only buy bacon if it's, I look at it and I buy bacon, I'll buy a pound.
I think the thing to take away from this is to look at the per ounce price. So if you see two packages that are the same price, are they really the same price? Look at the total ounces and what's the per ounce price.
Yeah, look at the volume. It's kind of like calories when they put on there. You look at the back of it and it says, ooh, it's only 200 calories. Say it's 180 calories. Well, yeah, but it's 4 portions and you just ate the whole bag.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, so now you're up to whatever that is, 600 or 700 calories. So,
okay, back to the bacon.
Okay, so the bacon's 3/4 cooked. You're going to add your vegetables except your potatoes, because potatoes are going to cook in, 8 or 9 minutes. So you add those a little bit later. Once you've got that, the vegetables going and the bouquet garni in there, you just stir it frequently. Then you're going to add your liquid to this, which is going to be your clam stock and your milk. And then you can also, I would hold off on your potatoes at this point. You add your clam stock and your milk, and then you want to bring that up to temperature, meaning hot to the touch, maybe 180. Well, actually hot to the touch is 150. Get it good and warm, because you're going to add your roux. You don't want to thicken anything when it's cold. You never want to thicken a cold liquid. Okay, so you warm it up. You thicken up with the roux, which is your butter and flour. That's your thickening agent. You add your potatoes, and then you just let that simmer. Let that simmer until the starch flavor cooks out, till your potatoes are tender, and then you adjust with salt and pepper. I very rarely will add salt and pepper to anything. I'll use it as something to kind of just, touch on at the end.
For finishing. Plus, you've got to figure out what was the sodium that the bacon is going to bring into it before
you salt
it. Yeah,
exactly. Bacon's going to add salt. Your clam base is going to add salt. When clams are cleaned, they have salt added to them in the container. So, you drain your clams. Remember, I said add the clam juice. You do not add the clams. You don't add the clams until the end. You add those 3 or 4 minutes before you're going to, maybe 5 minutes or whatever, before you're going to serve it. Because if not, those clams will become clam flavored rubber bands, and you don't want that.
You just need to reserve them and heat them through only.
Exactly.
They don't need to be cooked.
All right, so there it is, clam chowder. We're going to take a quick break. You've got a Cooking Like a Pro, Chef Cal and Mrs. Chef at KCNR. Talk to you in a minute.
Les poissons, les poissons. How I love les poissons. Love to chop them and to serve les papilles. First I cut off their heads and I pull out.
Covered. At Shasta Community Health Center, we offer this free service to our community. Our enrollment counselors can assist you with new applications, renewals, troubleshooting, and answering your questions about covered California plans or Medi-Cal, also known as Medicaid or Partnership Health Plan. We're here to help you make the best choice for you and your family. Call our outreach and enrollment team at 530-229-5117 to get help today. Shasta Community Health Center, because SCHC cares.
Red Bluff Roundup is on. April 18th, 19th, and 20th. Get your tickets now. Over $350,000 is up for grabs for 700 competitors. It's the biggest three-day rodeo in the country. Tickets are on sale now, so grab the good seats while you can. It's constant action with bucking horses, bulls, barrel racing, roping, wild pony riding, and more. Friday is Patriot Day, brought to you by Food Max and Outback Contractors. Gates open at 5, rodeo at 7. And an after party with live music. Saturday brought to you by Sierra Pacific Windows, Sierra Pacific Industries, and Corning Ford. Gates open at 12, rodeo at 2:30. And an evening concert by country music star Creed Fisher.
Tell me that you understand.
And Sunday is Davidson and Heyman Family and Dignity Health St. Elizabeth Hospital Tough Enough to Wear Big Day. Gates open at 12, rodeo at 1:30. Get your tickets now at the Roundup office or online at RedBluffRoundup.com.
Hi friends, RC here with Tobacco and Brew, bringing you this month's Cigar of the Humidor. Henry Clay, Warhawk, Rebellious. Backed by popular demand, this limited edition Toro is sure to please. Another fine example of Nicaraguan tobacco blended by AJ Fernandez. Complex, smooth, chocolatey Habano wrapper, a satisfying smoke with a clean finish. Get yours today at Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
Pickles, pickles, I like pickles. I like them better than an old fudge sickle. Pickles, pickles, I like pickles. Won't you give me a pickle?
Pickles, pickles, pickles. Hey, we're going to chat a little bit about pickles. I wanted to talk a little bit about that. But first off, I got to go back to clam chowder just real quickly because there's a few things I need to share. First off, oyster crackers. If you're going to have clam chowder, get oyster crackers. It's traditional. That's what you'll get if you go to the coast or you go into a nice seafood restaurant where they have clam chowder. I know we were up in around Trinidad or something and we had some clam chowder. It was delicious, but you get the oyster crackers. And then also make sure you warm up your bowls before you put your chowder in there. Makes a big difference. And then maybe a little garnish, a little chopped parsley. But here's one of the things that bothers me. And that's when you order clam chowder and you get it in a bowl, a French bread bowl. They'll take a round French bread, or sourdough bowl or round, and then they'll cut a hole in it, and you get this a lot down in San Francisco too, and they just don't do it right, and it drives me nuts because they forget the fact that water and oil don't mix, and you take that water, which is the liquid in this case would be the soup, and you put it in the bread, just raw bread, it's going to soak it right in, and what you want to do is you want to cut that bread bowl, that bread round, turn it into a bowl by cutting it out and scooping out the meat, I guess, of the bread in the center, and then butter it and then bake it. And that buttered, baked portion will keep the soup from soaking in and giving you a soggy bread bowl. So, okay, all right, on to pickles. Sorry I had to get that out because I've witnessed that too many times. Hey, they put it in a bread bowl. Well, is the bread bowl going to be, you know, toasted? Okay, so pickles. God, we made a big old jar of pickles. Actually, it's been a week because you want to try them, but you want to let them go about 5 days. And they were great. They were, you know, Krista's dad's recipe. They were just absolutely beautiful. There's something about pickles. Well, kids, especially younger kids, are fascinated with vinegar. They may not know it, but that's why younger kids will like go nuts on ketchup. Some will go crazy on on mustard, because all these things have or high concentrates of vinegar in them. Pickles is the same thing, but the bread and butter pickles are just wonderful. They're sweet, they're sour, they're crunchy. I think I added a little turmeric, which your dad's recipe says optional.
Yes, it is optional.
But boy, are they good. I mean, I'm trying to think of all the things I can make where I can put pickles on them. They're that good. I'll get off on a tangent real quick. I went to pick up a couple seasonings that I needed from the store, and they were giving away Spam bags. Big plastic bags. It looked like a big can of Spam on there.
And they are big bags.
And it just brought me back. They're having a grand opening. It's a local store here. And, it's a holiday market. And, I was taken back to my childhood. Cause that's when Dad used to, give us anything fried in a tortilla. It was that's in the cookbook. Anything fried in a tortilla, we got for breakfast. Usually it started with American cheese, and it might have ham in it. It might have Spam, and it might have bologna, but not just Spam or bologna, fried Spam or fried bologna, because you just can't get enough grease.
Just pan fried?
Yeah, just pan fried. Yeah, it was, but anyway, let's get back to pickling. So when you're pickling, you want, either an English cucumber. You don't want a regular cucumber because the outside skins will never get soft. They'll just be chewy all the way through. So you want either English cucumbers if you want bigger pickles, or just pickling cucumbers. And they're easy enough to grow. Really? They are? Okay.
That's how my dad came up with the recipe, because he grew English cucumbers.
Yeah. So basically you just want something that's high quality, something that's fresh. You want something that's free of any blemishes. And that's really about it. Slice them either by hand or on a mandolin. One thing about it is the thicker you slice them, the crunchier they'll be. Mm-hmm. So I highly, highly recommend that. It's a good thing all the way around. So if you want pickles, that's what you want to do. And again, but that's a bread and butter pickle, and there's certainly variety of other types of pickles you can do.
Well, bread and butter specifically comes down to the brine.
Yes.
Meaning it's a sweeter brine.
As the sugar, yep.
So it's a 1-to-1 ratio between vinegar and sugar?
Yeah, this recipe that we had here was actually, 1-to-1. One part sugar, one part vinegar.
And how much salt is in it?
Yeah. Well, you don't need it.
Salt is part of a brine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, well, I just threw the recipe towards her, so she's got it now. But, one other thing I noticed, and this is just kind of a tip for you out there, is we've been doing this for quite a while, and that's when you're working in your kitchen, one of the biggest pains is having to clean up. And you get this big pile of dishes, and then you got to clean them up. Well, Krista's got a cure for that.
The cure is to wash as you go, especially knives and cutting boards. I've really been cracking down on that, because what happens? You pull a bunch of stuff out, you prep a bunch of stuff, you're cutting on the cutting board, and then it gets set aside, and you start working through the rest of the recipe. And then you get to the end of the night, and the knife and the cutting board, things have soaked in, dried up, gotten kind of sticky. The thing is, before you start cooking, as soon as you prep everything, it doesn't take very long. If I use the Dawn Power Wash, the spray, it is so quick to just spray both sides of the knife, scrub both sides really quick, rinse it off, wipe it off with a dry towel, put it back in the block, and within a minute, you are done and cleaned up and ready to go on to the next thing and don't have to deal with longer wash time later down the road.
Yeah, this episode sponsored by Dawn Power Wash. but it's so... It just makes it more pleasant experience than saying, oh gosh, I gotta do dishes. Cause you certainly don't want to wake up to dishes in the morning. So you just keep our dishwasher empty and just put dishes in it as we go through the day. And it'd be amazing how fast it fills up.
So these pickles, really the only thing that you needed to cut up was the cucumbers and the onions.
And the onion.
Now, you did a chopped garlic, a pre-chopped garlic that comes in a jar from the store.
Yeah, only because I didn't have any whole garlic.
Exactly. But a whole garlic, you don't even have to chop, because you just put the whole pieces of garlic in this. And we did probably, a half-gallon jar?
Yeah.
And you just layer onions and garlic and cucumbers all the way to the top, and you don't even have to cook this brine.
Yeah.
You can use it cold.
Yeah, I did it cold. And it's, and surprisingly, you'd think, okay, the onion's not that thick, so it's going to brine. But so does the, does the garlic. I mean, you can pick out a clove of garlic and eat it where you normally couldn't, because garlic would be so strong and or pungent or whatever scripture term you want. And I mean, you couldn't really sit there and eat a whole clove of garlic. I mean, you could. It's not going to, you know, kill you, but you're not going to be kissing anybody anytime soon.
And in case you're curious about this recipe, it is on the website on culinaryyours.net. It's one of our earliest recipes.
Okay. Well, explain how to find that. Explain it like you're explaining it either to a five-year-old or to me. Actually, a five-year-old might know more about how to find it than I would. So explain it to a novice.
Go to culinaryyours.net. And you go into the search bar and you put pickles. And the bread and butter pickle recipe will be right there.
Okay. And they can get it by going to
culinaryyours.net.
And now how about cooking like a pro? Will that eventually get them to it?
It can, yes. Okay. Cookinglikeapro.net is also a link within our website. All roads lead to the main website.
Yeah. You can even search me if you want. Search Chef Cal.
ChefCal.net, MrsChef.net.
Senior. Yes.
All roads lead the same place.
There you go. Anyway, I also wanted to talk a little bit about starters, because we had some confusion in our household, which doesn't happen very often. But we were talking about starters, things like tapas, canapes, appetizers.
Hors d'oeuvres.
Yeah, hors d'oeuvres. Okay, so what are they? You know what? And we had to study this quite a bit in 2000, because the 2000 Olympics had a new category called tapas, T-A-P-A-S. It's actually translated lid in Spanish. And it's just the simple idea of a piece of crusted bread that would be served on top of a glass as a lid, and then maybe with a little meat or cheese end or something like that on it. We started looking into it, and like, you know, bite size. And if it's like a little one bite thing, then we would call it an amuse-bouche. Some people might call that a canapé. Usually an hors d'oeuvre, if it falls into the hors d'oeuvre category, it would be two bites. So as opposed to one. And then, from the restaurant standpoint, for an appetizer, we just use the term knife and fork, and usually it was between four and six bites. So if you're getting an appetizer, it's knife and fork, meaning that you would need a utensil generally to eat it. Now, I understand that chicken wings, you don't need a utensil, but basically just the volume of how many bites you're going to have. So.
And I think that tapas have expanded to the, it's more of a bar meal.
Exactly.
It's a Spanish bar meal.
Yeah, and I think because of that, you want foods that are going to whet the appetite, foods that are going to want people to drink more, which are, you want foods that are salty or foods that are spicy. Either salty foods or spicy foods will cause people to want to drink more.
And you can have, you know, even nuts, olives.
Yeah, I mean, spicy nuts is something that you see a lot of, and I really enjoy, you know, although I'm okay with beer nuts, too.
If you could do a tapa, what would you suggest?
You know, if I had to pick out one of my favorites, the challenge is it's $1,000 to eat there. Well, that's for two people drinking wine. But that would be the French Laundry, and that's what they hand you when you walk in. And I actually put it on my restaurant several times. I used it at the restaurant, and it's a salmon coronet. And coronet is just simply a imagine like an ice cream cone with a point at the bottom of it, basically, but it's about 2 inches high. And then that's filled with a creme fraiche. So you can imagine like a, kind of like a sour cream, but maybe a little bit more sour. And it has some shallots in it. So it's a shallot creme fraiche. Then on top of it, where the ice cream, if it looks like an ice cream cone, that top little ball was a mixture of raw and smoked salmon. It was finely chopped, like a bouillon, finely chopped, mixed with a little bit of lemon juice and extra virgin olive oil and some fresh chives, and it went on the top like a little ball, and then sticking in that was just a little chive. And I tell you, they hand it to you when you walk in. It's this signature thing that they hand it to you at the French Laundry down in Napa Valley, California, and you walk into the French Laundry, and they hand you one of these, you eat it, and it's like, wow, I need 10 more of those.
And they make you want to drink what? What kind of beverage would they serve with that?
Well, there they hand you champagne. Yeah, when you walk in, they hand you champagne, or sparkling cider. But they'll hand you a glass of champagne and a coronet, and you can walk around, you can walk outside, you can look at the beautiful garden and the territory, and it's just really, or the building itself. It used to be an actual old laundry, but Thomas Keller's done wonders there, and it certainly is now one of the, well, it depends on who you ask, probably the best restaurant in the world. Now the Trotter's not around. So we're going to take a quick break, Cooking Like a Pro. We will be back in just a moment.
Nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning and out in the garden, get your ripe ones, don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring.
Ready to turn your dreams into reality? At Simpson University, we offer a private Christian education that enriches your academic journey with faith and purpose. Whether you're pursuing your undergraduate degree, completing your degree, or advancing through graduate studies, our dynamic programs, personalized mentorship, and vibrant community are here to support you. Discover how Simpson University can help you achieve your goals and grow spiritually. Visit simpsonu.edu today to learn more. Simpson University, where your potential is limitless.
Saddle up, folks. Corey Meyer Real Estate presents the third annual Palisadro Frontier Day, Saturday, April 12th. Enjoy a full day of vendors, a trade show, a sizzling barbecue competition. Then, the action kicks up a notch with the Silver Bridge Rodeo Bulls and Bronx Bull Riding Event. Learn more about Frontier Day and purchase pre-sale tickets now at pcfrontierday.com. Special thanks to our sponsors, Zombie Arms and Ammunition, High Noon Beef, Vestra Resources, and CNC Pumps.
Now is a great time to prepare for the upcoming wildfire season. REU and city staff are busy clearing vegetation to mitigate wildfire risk to our power lines, facilities, and the community. You can also prepare by trimming back shrubs and tree branches that are closer than 5 feet from your home. Clear debris from your roof and gutter and clear dead vegetation on your property. For information about tree trimming and proximity to power lines, call 530-224-4356. Please remember, we all need to work together to prevent wildfires in our community.
The Reading Regional Chapter of Safari Club International 31st Annual Banquet will be Saturday, April 26th at the Wind River Event Center. Doors will open at 5 p.m. There will be games, live and silent auctions, and drawings, which will include over $35,000 in prizes for hunting, camping, and plenty of items for the ladies. We look forward to a fun evening in support of the world's largest wildlife conservation organization. To purchase tickets, go to scireading.org. That's scireading.org.
Oh, this is the night, it's a beautiful night, and we call it the Mellanorther.
Welcome back to Cooking Like a Pro here at KCNR. We do, as always, appreciate you listening and tuning in and to our 1 hour of cooking discussion about food, restaurants, that kind of stuff. And we'd like to just take a moment to thank Charlou's Tap House, family now Charlou's, for sponsoring Cooking Like a Pro podcast. Again, located just south of the Reading and the Gateway Shopping Center, one of the few family restaurants really left in the area, which we'd like to support family restaurants. Open 7 days a week, serving lunch and dinner. Also have a beautiful beer wall where you can buy and taste beer by the ounce, and they're even making authentic gelato. And don't forget they call it the adventure room, and it's just a room full of bouncy houses. And you got kids and you want to do something for a birthday, call down there or go online at charlies.com and get the contact to call them, because this is really, really cool. If you got kids that like bouncy houses, they're just, it's a room entirely full, a big room full of that. And then they have other things too. They have games and an arcade and all, and you can actually have the chief pizza maker himself, Charlou, show your kids how to make their own pizza. See, so they're learning something as well. Anyway, they have a great rewards program. You can take advantage of those great bargains immediately. So sign up for that as well and tell them that Chef Cal and or Mrs. Chef personally sent you down there. All right, so because of some of my travels to Tennessee, I don't think of Tennessee as being real far south, but you know, it's known for southern cooking. And, but anyway, when I'm over there and I see interesting things like, you know, a dinner option instead of potatoes would be grits, you know, and they're, you know, they have fried pickles, speaking of pickles, you know, things that you don't normally see, at least in California. But there are a lot of great comfort foods that I highly recommend. They're great for Sunday brunches, you know. I mean, biscuits. I know that we just used a biscuit recipe for it's in a Tennessee bread called butter bread, and you actually bake it what was that pan I cooked that in?
Oh, it was the...
A big heavy pan we got. It's not cast iron, but, it's heavy, all right. But again, there's just so many different, things that fall under comfort foods. And I think that it's a comfort food because it's a recognizable flavor. It's something that you can say, ooh, this tastes like home to me. You know, and there's a lot of things that evoke those memories of comfort food. But if you do go down further south, then you're really just talking, you know, the French, infusion of their cooking style, because the French were they ended up in Louisiana somehow. I guess I could have Googled that before I came. But anyway, you see a lot of comfort foods down there. Things like gumbo and jambalaya, red beans and rice. Things that you really don't see. Well, not really don't. Things you just don't see anywhere else. That's where they have them. Big biscuits, thick gravy.
Well, it's kind of a specialty area. You can look at, you know, the United States. We're big. You can fit a lot of countries in our country. And so we are very regional.
Yeah. The regional cuisines are wonderful. I mean, no matter where you go, you know, we have our part of Spanish cuisine. We have, but then again, you go into any large city, anything that's considered metropolitan, I don't know what that is, like 1.5 million or more, but whatever, you get in those large metropolitan areas, you have everything. They all have their little Chinatown and they have their different markets. I know, we just recently had an African, so that's a cultural, store open up here. So I haven't been, actually you went there. You picked up some pepper.
Yes. I'm going to start playing with that.
Yeah. It's got an interesting smell to it. That's going to be fun to play with. But, even things like a lot of the barbecue stuff comes from down there. Again, they would use the red thick, you know, syrupy or sugary might be a better term, sugary barbecue sauces. And they'll do brisket and they'll do any other type of the animal, whether it's a pig or whether it's a beef. Southern potato salad would basically kind of take out the mayonnaise, kind of similar to what it is that we talked about last week.
With the vinaigrette.
With the vinaigrette. Fried green tomatoes, black eyed peas. I know that we did an event once and it was with, crawfish. And we used to catch crawfish when I was a kid in the creek. You get a stick and you just run the stick through the creek, through the little ponds of water that's left.
In the creek?
Yeah, that's what it was called, yeah. And then you have to chase, then they'd be scurrying around, so you'd go and you'd find them. And the thing is, when you cook a crawdad, because there's not much meat on it, the only meat really is in the tail, but the flavor's in the body. So you pull off that you separate. They cook it whole in a lot of Cajun seasoning in there and you get all this flavor. And then you just take the body of the crustacean and the tail and you pull it apart. You eat the peel and eat the tail and then you just suck the head and then you get to suck all that juice that's been accumulating up there in the cranial area.
So here on the West Coast, we don't have that. What would you compare that to if we were here to prepare something like that on the West Coast?
Chocolate-covered ants or grasshoppers? I don't know. I don't think we have those. I mean, I ate rattlesnake and, you know, calf's brains and scrambled eggs and any part of the venison, any part of the pig's feet. You know, that's kind of a unique thing.
Would you think it's similar to like shrimp or something? I mean, I've never had it.
Well, as far as what a crayfish is, yeah, it's crustacean. It's a small, think of it as a really small lobster. It's kind of, that's the look of it. It's got, you know, the covered domed head with the little, you know, tentacles coming out. And, it's kind of like, think of it as a little baby lobster, like if Mr. and Mrs. Lobster got together and you'd have a little baby crawfish looking thing coming out. Hot chicken, that's the one thing that's really popular too. And we've been talking about pickles. That's one of the things that you get on your sandwiches is pickles. If there's only one thing on your sandwich as far as an add-on, it's pickles. You know, if you got a bun and slobbed or big handful of barbecue brisket on there or whatever it happened to be, you'd have pickles. That's all and sometimes they'll put coleslaw, but they always put pickles.
Is it a dill pickles or a sweet bread and butter pickle?
It's more of a bread and butter. Yeah, it's more of a bread and butter. Southern baked mac and cheese. And of course you can do anything and make it, you know, Southern by just adjusting the flavors to the flavors that you would find down there. Things like, I think I mentioned jambalaya, etouffee, I mean, things that are really deep, reds, brown or brown sauces. So you just got different flavors of, you know, the gumbo and all those fun things. But anyway, if you get a chance to go down, catfish is also another big thing. That's something you really don't see up here. I mean, you can catch catfish. We used to catch them all the time.
Would you say that Southern cuisine is, okay, we're trying to make it different from California. Is it different because of seasonings? Is it different because of the ingredients they use? Is it different because of the cooking styles they use?
All three. Yeah, definitely all three. You know, ingredient wise, I know the second thing you mentioned, the things like we don't see a whole lot of catfish here, and you already mentioned that you haven't seen crawfish, you know, and, you know, I mean, I don't know if you, maybe you didn't live by a creek, but, you know, if you did, you would have had crawfish, but you don't see a lot of catfish here, but you do see a lot of catfish there. So, ingredients, they're more prevalent where they're grown. And that's changed a lot because now you can, you know, I can get bluefin tuna, you know, I can order it now and have it tomorrow from, you know, Taiwan or something. So, you know, they didn't have those kind of shipping before and the way they can ship things and, you know, in a chilled fashion and keep them chilled and keep the high quality there. But again, one thing though, when they do their breadings, most of the breadings where we would use breadcrumbs, more often than not, they'll use cornmeal. And now, so that's a big thing, too. Cornmeal bread catfish.
You'd mentioned beans and rice. I had never heard of beans and rice until I got into college, and my roommate made it. How would you make beans and rice? Because that is very Southern. And it's actually very healthy. It's very filling. How would you make it?
Well, you know, I'd make it together. Because you want, you know, a lot of your flavor or most of your flavor is going to come from your beans and then of course your seasonings and stuff. But you want that to soak into the rice. And usually it's a tomato based dish. It can be mild. It can have a little bit of spice to it. But the key and the secret to that is making sure that the beans and the rice are both cooked, you know, perfectly, al dente, we would call it. You know, we don't want it to just be mashed together, but then we don't want it to be crunchy
either. Now that's doing dried beans with rice, correct?
No, this is more of something like a cassoulet. It's something that it would be stewed.
No, what I'm saying is instead of a canned bean, which is already cooked, you're starting with the dried bean and trying to cook both of them together?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, the canned bean would be the ultimate because it's much easier and it's going to save you a whole lot of time.
So cook your rice, add your can of beans, and season it.
If you're going to use beans that are already soft or tender,
to do beans and rice,
and then just come up with a seasoning. Again, a lot of times these things are going to be on the spicier side because of the region, but you know it's not necessarily how you need to make it. It's just like we talked about clam chowder. If you don't want bacon, don't put it in there. You know. So again, a lot of different things from the South, that you can get. I know fried chicken is a big thing, because it's, you know, they have large braising apparatuses where you can, and that's what you really want. Because when you're cooking, something, you want the temperature of the oil when you're deep frying. You want the temperature of the oil to stay the same. And if you've got oil in a big heavy pot that's insulated and you drop a bunch of, you know, fried chicken in there, to cook, it's going to cook beautiful because it's not, but if I had a thin walled pot and I had the same temperature of oil, this 375 degrees is what you want it to be, and I drop it in there, the oil temperature is going to dramatically drop because there's no insulation, and now my food is soaking in oil all the way up until the heat recovers and it gets back up to the 375 and starts cooking at full force. So, you know, the vessel does make a difference.
Speaking of vessels, the pan you used for the butter bread was a carbon steel pan, which is similar to cast iron, but much lighter weight. And also, you started to talk about hot chicken. What is hot chicken?
Hot chicken it can be a couple different things, but generally, either the heat in the that coats the chicken is in the coating, which it's always going to be some in there, and it's not like something like you'd take like buffalo red wing and just like dip it in a sauce, but basically your seasoning is in the coating, but then you can also spice it with any number of high octane, you know, flavors if you want. So, but yeah, it's something that's real popular. It's just a breading that's got a lot of flavor into it. I would say that what we're talking about on those seasonings would be anything that falls in the category of Cajun. And you can make up your own too if you want. You can make your own Cajun seasoning. That's not a problem. Anyway, we are cooking like a pro, and we'll be back in just a moment.
I don't want French fried potatoes, red ripe tomatoes. I'm never satisfied.
KCNR Shasta is also broadcasting at K243CT Redding.
Red Bluff Roundup is on April 18th, 19th, and 20th. Get your tickets now. Over $350,000 is up for grabs for 700 competitors. It's the biggest three-day rodeo in the country. Tickets are on sale now, so grab the good seats while you can. It's constant action with bucking horses, bulls, barrel racing, roping, wild pony riding, and more. Friday is Patriot Day, brought to you by Food Max and Outback Contractor. Gates open 5, rodeo at 7. And an after party with live music. Saturday brought to you by Sierra Pacific Windows, Sierra Pacific Industries, and Corning Ford. Gates open at 12, rodeo at 2:30. And an evening concert by country music star Creed Fisher.
Tell me that you understand.
And Sunday is Davidson and Heyman Family and Dignity Health St. Elizabeth Hospital Tough Enough to Wear Pink Day. Gates open at 12, rodeo at 1:30. Get your tickets now at the Roundup office or online at RedBluffRoundup.com.
Save 20 to 30% off all plants at Turtle Bay's 33rd Annual Spring Plant Sale, featuring heirloom vegetables, hard-to-find perennials, shrubs, California natives, and more. The nursery specializes in drought-tolerant plants that thrive in Redding's climate. The members-only sale will take place on Friday, April 4th, 4 to 7 p.m., and the public sale will be held on Saturday, April 5th, 9 to 3 p.m. at 1100 Arboretum Drive. Learn more at turtlebaynursery.org.
Have you ever wanted to unlock your musical potential? Cascade Curations not only has great music, art, and fashion, we also offer fun and exciting music lessons for all ages and skill levels. Whether you dream of playing the piano, guitar, drums, or vocals, our instructors will guide you every step of the way. With flexible scheduling and personalized instruction, you'll be playing your own tunes in no time. Don't just listen to music, create it. Call or text us at 530-255-4855 to book your first lesson. Cascade Curations, where we believe anyone can learn to play their own song.
Cheeseburger in paradise, heaven on earth with an onion slice. Not too particular, not too precise. I'm just a cheeseburger in paradise.
Welcome back to Cooking Like a Pro. Hey, thank you for hanging in there and listening to us. Cheeseburger in Paradise. You know, I wanted to talk about a few things on this last segment, but one of them is burgers, cheeseburgers, well, just regular burgers. But it's important when you go and buy a burger that you see the volume of beef versus, or percentage rather, to the percentage of fat. And because you get what you pay for. And if you buy something that's 70% lean, with, you know, 30, that would mean the other 30% to get you up to 100 would be fat. When you cook it, you know, that 30%, basically a third, is gone because the fat's going to cook out. Now, yes, fat is flavor, but it's also going to be volume, so you can figure that this burger is going to shrink to two-thirds of what its regular first size was. So if you really, let's say you're making a meatloaf, or you're making meatballs, and you want them to kind of maintain their size, then you really want to get something with a higher meat content as opposed to fat. And usually I go like 97.3. I mean, you want fat, again, fat's flavor. Maybe even 90.10, but no more fat than 10%.
What about if you, let's say, got a 80.20 and there is going to be some fat cooking out of it? Could you add an additional fat to it? That would keep the moisture in it, but not render out.
Well, yeah, I suppose you could, but any fat's going to render because it turns liquid. You know, so yes, that's a good idea. If you want to try to maintain moisture, you know, because that's what fat is. It's moisture and it's flavor. Well, and it's sodium. So let's not forget that. But again, when you're making that cheeseburger, take a look at the burger and see the percentage of meat versus fat. And the higher percentage of meat, the better off you are. And again, it depends on what you're making. If you want, you know, cheap hamburgers and knowing that they're going to shrink, then, you know, get 70-30. I don't know if they make anything, you know, less, you know, meat than that. But anyway, so also I wanted to mention the barrel chicken, because I was working in the cookbook and this came up, and it's just a topic of something that's very near and dear and precious to my heart, because it's something we've cooked our whole life, and it kind of reminded me of the discussion we were having in the other segment before, where you know, things are so much different when you're in the South, or maybe like when I go back to Tennessee, how I see things that are different. I know that one of the things that we used to do a lot is cook on hibachi. We talked about that a little bit last week. But a barrel chicken would be something that they would never even have heard of, you know, if you go you probably don't even have to leave the state heading east, and they wouldn't know what that is, because it's something that was pretty much started here. It's kind of like if you go east of California, nobody knows what a tri-tip is, you know, because tri-tip is something that was, you know, coined, and the name was coined, mm-hmm. coined here. But the barrel chicken is cooked in a large barrel. It's a 50-gallon drum, and it's something that where you can hook the chickens. The fire's in the bottom, the barrel's standing up. The fat drifts off the chicken, which is on hooks, and it's attached to the top right under the lid. And then all this smoke comes up, and the chicken cooks with this smoke, and it just gets an amazing flavor. And it's 160 degrees cooked all the way through, and it still even has a pinkness to it. So that's where the flavor comes from. So if you haven't had barrel chicken, you need to do that. And then also, one other term that I wanted to use, and that was baste. When you're basting in the chef business, we call it mopping. So we have like a baste. It's just like a mop you'd have in your kitchen, but really small, handheld mop. You dip that in the sauce, or you dip that in your basting, you know, liquid, whatever that is, your flavored liquid, and then you just kind of mop the chicken to get that added flavor. So, you know, when like, it's kind of like cooking a pot roast, or not pot roast, but braising meat, where you're, you know, slowly ladling those meat juices back over the top of it, kind of like maybe cooking fish in a pan, where, you know, you add butter and then you're ladling or spooning that butter back over the top.
So when would you do that? How long does it typically take a whole chicken to cook in a barbecue or in a barrel?
Yeah. In a barrel, we cut them in half, and it takes about an hour and 15 minutes, but that depends greatly on how hot it is outside.
The weather.
Yeah, it's a big component, because if it's hot outside, it could be cooked in, you know, 50 minutes, and if it's cold, it could take, you know, close to 2 hours.
Okay, so let's say on a day that's a warmer day, and it's going to take about an hour to it's basically it's
yeah,
be
hour,
roasting
hour 15 minutes,
a whole
yeah.
chicken. Mm-hmm. When would you start this basting, this mopping process? How far along? Yeah. How far into it?
Yeah, you want to do that towards the end. You want to do that towards the end when the coals are still hot enough, but they haven't started to gray. I mean, not gray, but they haven't started to burn out. Because once they burn out, then they become they're not no longer briquettes. Now they're you know, what a briquette runs out, it just becomes soot. So you don't want that soot to come up. So you want to baste it prior to that. I remember we did a large event. I think it's like 10,000 people. We had like 25 barrels going and all kinds of chicken flying that day. But it's a lot of fun. But again, it's unique. It's something that we would do here on in Northern California, that you wouldn't see in other places. Just I'm sure as, you know, I mean, I'm pretty versed because I've done some traveling, so I know what a soft shell crab is. But, you know, if you hadn't been to the East Coast, you probably wouldn't know. Now they do ship things like we just discussed a little more, you know, more. So that's, you know, a little bit different. I mean, I did an event where we wanted Maine lobsters instead of Australian lobsters. So we got them from the East Coast, and they came. They were alive. They were crawling out the seaweed containers all over the loading dock. That was a different story for a different day. But, yeah, you can, you know, go ahead.
So I've got a question. If we don't have a barrel, we don't have an oil drum barrel, let's say you've got a Weber. And that's charcoal cooking also. Could you do the same process on a Weber grill?
Yeah, you can't go wrong with a Weber. I think those Webers, we still got one that looks like it's from the 70s or something. I don't even think they make those little round guys anymore. But those Webers really was a good idea because they were the first people that I ever seen that came out with a barbecue that had enough air holes in the bottom where, and you could even adjust it.
The little spinny dial.
So it would keep the fire going because fire doesn't burn without oxygen. But then you could enclose or open the top, and when you enclose it, you lock in all that smoke, and that smoke is where the flavor comes from.
So real quick, how do you start briquettes? I mean, truly, I really haven't done. I've done it Boy Scouts with the chimney.
Yeah.
I've done the chimney starter.
Yeah. The chimney is the best way to go. The chimney is a really good way to go if you're using just regular standard briquettes. If most of the time, people will use briquettes that already have a lighter fluid, that's been applied. So you just it's called match light or something. You'll see those in the store where you just throw a match on and it goes up. The problem I have with that is, you're already inviting carcinogens. What are those called?
Carcinogens.
Yeah, carcinogens. You're already inviting those in just because of the cooking method that you're doing. I don't think we need a bunch of that type of fuel flavor, coming out of the cooking material. And then you can always add any kind of wood, not any kind. You want hard wood, usually tree wood, walnut tree fruit wood, that's really hard because then you're going to get some good flavors out of it. Cherry wood's a good one. It's mild. Maple can, because these woods will infuse these products with those flavors, especially, cedar plank salmon. I know we've talked about that before. We used to cook it, and you cook it right on a untreated piece of cedar plank, and it's just amazing. That flavor is just... It's unique. It's something that's got a lot of flavor to it. So let's see, what else was I doing today? I went by the store. Oh, and they were putting in the asparagus and then the lady was working on the herbs and remember when you buy asparagus or herbs, when you get those home, make sure you trim the bottom off of where it came off the stalk, right above the ground. Kind of trim that off a little bit and then stand it up there because the plant, the herb, in this case asparagus, we do it with parsley, we do it with just about all of our herbs. And I used to do that because when Dean Mercurio's restaurant, my first restaurant that I owned, we'd put like little bouquets of herbs on every plate. So it was pretty cool, but you want to keep them fresh and you do that by trimming them and then setting them in kind of some lukewarm water. The same way you do with flowers.
Mm-hmm, very similar. Yeah. Now that reminded me, the little parsley that used to go out in every single place. I'm thinking of Sizzler. I don't care what steak or what piece of chicken you got. They all had a little pile of a little parsley puff in the
garnish.
Corner.
Garnish, but if you trace that back to French cooking, which is really where parsley started, being a garnish on the plate, it was actually on the plate so you could eat it last. And what you do is you'd eat your meal, then you'd eat your parsley, and the parsley was your breath cleanser.
Nobody does that anymore. Most people don't even put parsley on their stuff anymore. They send it out.
Parsley's just it's a lost art. Now they give you an Andes mint. Say here,
You don't even get those anymore.
That could, yeah, they don't give you much for free anymore. When everything went a la carte, it started going downhill from there. But anyway, also another thing, last thing I wanted to touch on as we come up to the end here is, of this hour, God, it goes by fast, is to think outside the box. See ingredients and put a method to it. We've been talking about Southern cuisine. We've been talking about, chicken. We've been talking about, clam chowder and pickles. It's kind of, think outside the box. So say you want your pickles to be spicy. Throw in some chili flakes. You want your clam chowder to not have orange in it. Don't put carrots in it. But so there's a lot of different things that you can do. If you wanted your chicken to have a little touch to it, on your barrel chicken, rosemary is something that grandpa used to put in there. A little bit of rosemary and a little bit goes a long way. But I know that we had a tempura dish, that was actually, gnocchi. That I got when I was in Frankfurt. I'd seen that, and it was just a great dish. But you would never think to you take gnocchi and literally put it in the tempura batter and then fry it. So, but anyway, so how can they find the archived Cooking Like a Pro podcast.
Go to, if you have Spotify or Apple or even on YouTube, we have the podcast going out and saved in the archives where you can get past episodes. We have 30 posted. We have reached the 30 mark, and I've got a few more in the queue.
Well, there you go. Hey, and also, you know, you can go to YouTube and get a cream of seven onion soup. So anyway, we appreciate you as always tuning in and listening to us talk about cooking. Make it a great day. Be kind out there, folks. God bless you, and we will talk to you next week on Cooking Like a Pro.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.